Good morning and welcome to the Wolf Wake Up Call. I'm Tana Hartman and I'll be your host this morning. Here with me are Dick Paddock, our engineer, Lucy Lewis, and Lori Hoyt. We're all members of Wolf and we're glad to have you with us this morning. Our guest today is Chris Moran of the Interfaith Council. And welcome, Chris.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
What we want to talk about today is the hunger and homelessness, primarily. Even in the best of times, those are serious problems. But in a climate of economic crisis, it is the poorest who wind up suffering first and worst. So can you tell us a little bit about how the what's happening now with you all, what the services you provide, what's happening with the new men's residential facility and the food operations center? And then we'll talk more about your funding.
Well, first of all, someone told me the other day that in the best of times, we as nonprofits do our work. In the worst of times, that's when we're really tested. And I think that we're in the worst of times. And many nonprofits in this community are struggling right now financially. And certainly the folk that that we serve every day are coming in greater streams and greater numbers to our facilities for various services, primarily food. I think that we were talking about there being a recession more than a year ago, and now the word is actually being used in the English vocabulary here, there, and in other places. And what's really happened, which I think we all need to understand, since we're all affected now, I think we're going to give greater attention to the fact that those who are in the service economy or working every day for very little are bearing this burden primarily. In terms of additional food costs, forget about gasoline at the pumps. That's going to go up again, in my judgment. But have food costs gone down? Have other costs gone down that were attributed to rising gasoline costs? So a lot of people are hurting, and it's not an issue of underemployment anymore. It's a real issue of unemployment and bankruptcies. You know, I hate to say this, but, you know, we even have staff and volunteers who have been threatened with bankruptcy situations. For various reasons, either loss of other family member jobs or illnesses or just a combination of different factors.
Yeah, I know that they're projecting, among the figures I've heard, is that 1 in 7 families are expected to lose their home due to foreclosure in the coming year.
I heard that the other day, yeah.
Yeah, and the actual real figures, I think, when you don't jimmy them the way the government has typically done, are closer. Unemployment figures are closer to 12% now, I understand.
Well, as Lucy knows, we were in Michigan recently. I don't know why we went to Ann Arbor in particular when that state was suffering tremendously. And I'm from there, and I spent some time in my hometown visiting. I just went door to door and talked to a lot of folks that had recently become unemployed. Factories had closed their doors. This was a large Mexican-American population that I was talking to, and they were mad as hell because everybody had let them down, and they were also mad because their children didn't seem to care as much as we all did when we were younger. Those are the things that I was hearing, and I felt, gosh, you know, something inside of me said, you know, I would really like to go back there and start organizing people all over again, because people are ready to really cry out and to march for whatever it is that they believed in. And I think that almost has to happen if things are going to change in particular ways.
Are you seeing any kind of galvanization down here?
No. I'm seeing more people talking about this issue. As I've said over and over again for a long, long time, that our populations that we work with, the consumers that we work with, are not organized and should be organized. But those who run organizations, governments, and so on, certainly don't want that to happen. Because if it did, they would have to really pay attention to what's being said. I've made recently several trips to the Board of Aldermen here and the Board of Commissioners, and said repeatedly when the county was considering its new 20-year plan, which they passed, that they should have considered or included an anti-poverty element in that plan, since they talk a lot about living wages and they talk a lot about what may be happening in Orange County, but
this is the 10-year plan to end crime.
No. This is a 20-year comprehensive plan that the county recently approved, which, in my judgment, doesn't really begin to talk about the depth of problems that we need to be concentrating on over the next 10 or 15 years.
And what? Can talk a little bit more about that. What do you think we should be concentrating on?
Well, I've said to them that when they plan developments, we always hear Chapel Hill talking about a 15% housing requirement or affordable housing requirement, which I'm not sure what it means. I mean, who's benefiting by that housing, and are the folks that we work with benefiting? But I've said to the county, when they consider developments, they should be thinking about what services or human service providers or caregivers they would be providing to eventually deal with domestic violence issues or a death in a family or a loss of job or a critical need that might come up for a homeowner in a particular neighborhood at any given time. So I think the county has a responsibility to say, well, before we build this development, do we have enough caregivers that can serve or properly serve the individuals that will be living here?
I'm surprised, because I thought from what I'd read, it's been a while, but the county partnership to end homelessness included, I mean, not just governmental agencies, but your group, the IFC, and some others that were, I thought, were looking at things like that.
Well, we were included.
Mm-hmm. But?
Well, I don't think that those efforts should be from government down efforts. They should be grassroots efforts. And, you know, when we were in Ann Arbor, as Lucy knows, the new facility that was built there, $9 million facility that was built there, was a part of the blueprint, or the primary part of the blueprint to end homelessness there. 48% of all the dollars that organization receives to operate that facility are governmental dollars. And $3 million plus were put aside by town and county governments. And I challenge those who went to Ann Arbor to talk about those issues here and how it could be done here. I was told privately that it would never happen here by an elected official. And my concern about the 10-year planning process is that we stop talking about chronic homeless people and we start talking about homeless people, which is an inclusive number of all those that are affected. And we start talking about all of the individuals. We have nearly 1,800 households now dependent upon the food pantry which could become homeless at any day.
Okay. Explain for listeners the difference. You're talking about chronic versus...
Well, chronic is an interesting... it depends on who's defining it, I guess. But I think it involves individuals who have substance abuse issues, who are visible street people, who may or may not be homeless, who folks just don't know how to deal with them. And how do we sort of make that go away? And my view is that we serve 800 plus people every year, different individuals, men, women, and children. And they're ready to move into affordable housing. They're ready to have bank accounts. They're ready to be active members of this community. And what support systems are going to be provided for them so that they can effectively put homelessness behind them and pay their taxes and work every day and buy their own groceries and do what we all do? Where's the passion for that? And I don't really see a lot of passion around that those objectives.
Well, you were saying it needs to come from the grassroots that you didn't expect.
Well, you know, the evening that that some of us spoke to the Board of Commissioners when the comprehensive plan was passed, there are 10, 12, 15 people who got up and talked about schools. There were children, there were teachers, there were parents, and There are some members of the Board of Commissioners that always pass school resolutions because they know it's a huge lobby and it's a huge constituency. If poor folks got up or if clergy got up or if nonprofits got up routinely and said, look, folks, we need to have an open dialogue about what's really going on in this county, and we need for you to reset your priorities so that these issues are addressed, I think there would be change.
Unfortunately, I think that under any circumstances, people are reluctant. People who are not faced with that problem, you know, are reluctant to even think about it. And in a climate like this, I'm finding, talking with people, for instance, at UNC, that some of them, it's like, I've enough to worry about. You know, I can't get involved with this. So, because I sent out an email in my department with the call for donations, mm-hmm. and I've gotten some good response, but not nearly enough.
Well, I think we are absolutely amazed at the amount of support we get from different places in this community.
Where does your support come
from? It comes from everywhere. There was an effort that we didn't even know about. It was a band competition that was done on campus somewhere. That brought in $3,300. I mean, we weren't involved in the event. We didn't know about the event, but these folks basically organized that. There are student groups that are collecting canned goods all the time. There are businesses in town that instead of doing Christmas or holiday gifts for employees, make contributions to us. This is incredibly well received by us. However, I think that there are a lot of folks in communities who really don't know what to do. They really don't know how to make a difference. And they're just waiting to be told how to do that. And I think there are lots of folks that just, they want to see change. They want to see better government. They want to see more inclusive participation by different groups. And they're just not sure how that can happen and how they can play a role in that.
Well, I would like for us to talk more about that. I'd like you to tell us about some of the initiatives that you all have going on. But we're going to take a break for just a second for a public service announcement. There is going to be a rally to support the striking Moncur plywood workers on Saturday, December 20th. It'll be at noon at the Chatham County Courthouse in Pittsboro. And the Moncur Plywood International Association of Machinists, Local 369, workers have been on strike since July of this year, and the employer has refused to bargain in good faith and demanded a 60-hour mandatory work week. 60 hours is just incredible, but also a prohibitive 300% to 400% increase in health insurance premiums, a cut in pension benefits, seniority, and other negotiated rights. Supporters are urged to bring holiday food, financial contributions, and toys. And if you need more information or to donate, call Lori Hoyt at 919-968-1888 or Miriam Thompson, 919-370-4114. They are part of the Faith Labor Community Solidarity Committee. And they can give you information about the event and about carpooling. I hope you'll turn out. Again, that's December 20th at noon at the Chatham County Courthouse in Pittsboro. And it's to support the Moncur workers who have been on strike since July and are still not facing any positive resolution. Although on the upside, we have the Smithfield workers. You all may have heard who won their right to unionize. I also want to say a word about our sponsor, Internationalist Books. They're at 405 West Franklin Street. They are a wonderful little bookstore and community resource. If you haven't been in there, you should go in there. If they don't have it on the shelves, they'll get it for you. Again, they're 405 West Franklin Street. That's Internationalist Books. They are a Chapel Hill institution. And Triangle Wilf. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom is one of the oldest peace and justice organizations in the world. Triangle Wilf, you can find more information at the website, trianglewilf.org. And third, not least, is the radio station here. It's an all-volunteer radio station. It is WCOM-LP, Chapel Hill in Carrboro. And communityradio.coop. We've got something going off in the background. I don't know what it is. But again, communityradio.coop. And check it out. This is an all-volunteer station, and we need your support. Thanks. And now we're back with our guest, Chris Moran, today to talk more about what's going on with hunger and homelessness in this community. And how, we also want to get to how we can help.
By the way, I don't think that a 60-hour mandatory work week is legally defensible.
I don't see
it either.
And for
it to even be demanded is quite extraordinary.
Yeah, so. I don't see how that it could be legal either.
Right to work state.
Uh-huh. All right, Lori has just said that this is a right to work state, and
yeah, but there are laws about overtime and comp time, and which we know very well because we honor those laws in I suggest that a lot of employers are not even familiar with those requirements. If you work more than 40 hours, you're entitled to either time and a half or the choice of an equal hour of comp time.
Yeah, no, they'll pay within the pay period after 40 hours, but they're forced, if they're forced to work, that they physically can't do it.
Oh, okay. So they will be paid. After 40 hours, they are paid the time and a half, but nonetheless, working 60 hours is a real hardship. Imagine
it's harsh conditions.
Can't do it.
And, yeah, I'm sure that's very hard work, too.
Sorry for saying that. But.
No. It needs to be said. Let's go back. Tell us about all the services that you all provide.
Well, I think the primary services that we're known for are shelter. We have two homeless facilities, Community House and Home Start, and but a lot of people don't know that the provision of food is our greatest service. We serve close to 90,000 meals every year at the community kitchen. That's three meals every single day of the year, and we last month I think provided around 1,300 bags of groceries. I think that was the previous month, but it was the largest number in our history. And as I said earlier, we're now approaching 1,800 households, which is that are card-carrying members of the pantry, which is a 35% increase from last year. So it's a huge number of people that feel the need for safety net, something or other here, since that doesn't exist anymore at the federal level. For years have done a lot of community education, advocacy. We are proponents of living wage issues, of the right for folks to have housing, simple housing as I call it. I don't like to use the word affordable because it's defined differently by just about everybody. But simple housing that people can, if anyone has a house now, hold on to it. Because if you lose it, it's going to be really hard to get another one. And I'm telling you that the issue with Detroit and the bailout really, in my judgment, affects all of the workers who will lose their homes if those companies dramatically change, even through bankruptcy reorganization. And once they lose those homes, they won't get other homes like them ever again. If they lose those wages, they won't get wages like those ever again. And I know a lot of those folks, and I really want to see that legislation pass.
Yeah. And I know a couple, too, who are facing it. And if you are facing it, go and talk to somebody. You can get help and advice, and don't wait until it's too late.
Right.
What's happening with the new men's residential facility?
Well, as of last Friday, I believe it was, the university took ownership of the Duke Energy property on Martin Luther King Boulevard and Homestead Road. It took a long, long time, and that's because you had two huge bureaucracies going through all of the sanctions and the approvals and legal requirements that was needed. And so now we are getting permission from the university to complete environmental review of that property, so all the federal dollars that have been already allocated to us can be released. It's crazy, but we have to do this. The university has already done environmental reviews. We have to do one as well, based on a federal law that was passed in 1967 or 8. It takes 3 to 6 months for that process to be completed based upon all the postings and the announcements. And then if we want to get CDBG or home dollars from local governments, we got to do that all over again.
Okay, CDBG.
Community Development Block Grant dollars, which are federal dollars released down to certain town governments. And home dollars are dollars released to usually county governments that all three governments have a vote in and how that money is dispersed. We've had some of those allocations. But again, we would have to go through another 45-day environmental review to get those dollars released. And if we got state money, we would have to do it again. So it's the old days are coming back to me when we did Home Start, and we were just going to take a step at a time, and we've hired GGA architects to do the design of the men's facility. And we will determine what it's going to cost once that design is finished. And then we hopefully do a capital campaign, provided that we find a location for the community kitchen.
Okay, what's up with that?
Well, nothing is up with that. Except our board of directors has basically said that since we own the building in Carborough and that's where our pantry is, the kitchen and the pantry will be located there. Unless the town provides another suitable choice. Because people aren't going to come to us and say, here, put it there, and so on. And the message I think that's important here is that there is really nothing to be afraid of. The folks that are going to eat in this facility or get groceries are people that live in homes in Carborough and Chapel Hill. It's going to be us. Getting those services, or anyone who is affected by this economic crisis. And a community's responsibility, in my judgment, is to feed folks that are hungry and to not throw food away that could otherwise be recycled or used, or to develop new resources of food, whether it's growing food to share or producing more food in counties. Instead of importing it from other places. So there's a lot of thinking around this issue for making communities sustainable and helping poor folks to stay in their homes and stay in their jobs and receive be part of the safety net that they're entitled to.
Aside from the food donations, where is the food coming from?
It comes from all over. It comes from businesses. It comes from folks that when people sometimes leave town and they're cleaning out their pantries, they'll give us that food. Surprisingly, the pace or the distribution or the donations have kept up with the distribution pretty well. So as our distribution has gone up 15-16%, donations have. And last summer, we got more food donated than we ever have, thanks to the postal drive and to a lot of other community efforts that people got behind. I think it's also attributed to a new liaison structure that I created about a year and a half ago among congregations.
Explain that.
Well, liaisons are individuals that are appointed by congregations that meet about 6 times a year. And watching these folks has just been extraordinary for me anyway, watching all the energy and how they sort of motivate each other to do different things and do things together. Whether it's finding more volunteers or finding more food or coming back to us and saying, you might want to consider doing or providing the service a little bit differently. It might be more efficient if you did it that way. And it's just, I think it's a great communication and frankly, that's what it's about. In this community, there needs to be a greater sharing of information before we make judgment on certain things, whether it be transfer stations, whether it be kitchen pantries, whether it be airports. The problem is that we're very quick to judge something because we don't have enough information. And we have been sort of asking folks to consider that in more deliberate ways.
Well, how could people get more information around this?
About which?
Around this.
We're willing to meet with anyone at any time to sort of lay out what we have in mind. And we have a best practices committee of business folk that have been meeting for more than a year to say to us, well, in all possible worlds, we would love to see you do X, Y, and Z if you had the dollars to do it. This is how this operation could run in a way that it would be neighborhood friendly, that would be accessible to the folks that need services, and designed in a way that makes sense to everybody. So we invite any group or any person that wants to know more or wants to be involved to join this process.
I know you did really well with your challenge grant. The Steward Fund was going to give you a challenge grant. It was $45,000 you had to raise, mm-hmm. and you did well over that. But otherwise, have you seen big changes in your funding, and how are you? We're going to have to wrap up here right away.
Well,
but tell people also how they can help, donate, volunteer.
We depend every day on private contributions since the federal and state dollars have gone away. And we may have done well with the Stewards Challenge, but we're always nervous about what's going to be happening next year and how tight dollars will be and where, you know, how people choose to support local charities. So even when we do well, we're still nervous. And we encourage anyone in the community that wants to support basic needs or what we're philosophically trying to do, we welcome them at any time.
How can people reach you? And
They can call me at 929-6380 extension 26, or my email address, which is executive@ifcmailbox.org.
executive@ifcmailbox.org.
And I love for people to call and try to talk to as many individuals as I possibly can.
Talk to as many individuals.
Well, I get a lot of phone calls and I get a lot of emails, but what I'm saying is that
you try to talk to as many.
I try to do that as much as possible because people have a lot of different ideas and suggestions and recommendations, many of which we consider.
Thank you, Chris. I know this is an extremely, extremely important issue, and it's affecting a lot of families in our communities.
Christmas coming up.
I hope you all, again, that's executive@ifcmailbox.org or 929-6380 extension 26. You can get more information, you can donate, you can volunteer. Please help. And thank you. Join us again next week. You're listening to the Wilf Wake Up Call and WCOM LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro. Thanks, and join us again next week.